Now, we're talking this week about emerging infections, including viruses, and one of these, one of the best examples of that is HIV, human immunodeficiency virus. But where did it actually come from and when? Well, joining us now is Mike Warraby. He's a professor of evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome to The Naked Scientist. So what do we think is the origin of HIV and when did it first pop up in humans?
So this study that we recently published, we used some archival samples. So we went kind of in a time machine back to 1960 and sequenced a variant of HIV from that time point. And from that vantage point, it became possible to kind of home in on when we think the pandemic strain first started circulating in humans. And it's pretty early. The virus maybe celebrated its 100th anniversary in humans. Our best guess is about 1908, plus or minus 20 years.
Well, first of all, let's just take a look at how you came by these samples. So what was the work that led up to you being able to say, I've got examples of the virus from 1960?
Yeah, actually, it kind of traces back to last time we talked 4 years ago. It was regarding some work I'd done collecting virus samples from chimpanzees in the Congo. So that's one way you can go about investigating the origins of the virus. You can look at the modern counterparts in the reservoir species. At that time, I started, actually even before that, I started thinking about other ways that you could get at it. And the obvious thing was to try to get human samples that go really far back in time. And the state of the situation at that time was we had one little glimpse, a fragmentary sequence from one HIV patient from 1959, and then there was no sequence at all until the late 70s, early 80s.
Because that 1959 sample was a blood sample that someone had luckily stored in a freezer for years, wasn't it?
Exactly. It was something that was collected for other reasons. It was genetic research to do with malaria, someone had the foresight to save those samples, and Central African blood samples that go back that far in time are hard to find. And I think most people just kind of gave up and thought, okay, we got the 1959 one. We're not going to find any more frozen blood samples, so this is all we have. What I thought about was, are there other kinds of samples that aren't in freezers and aren't so delicate? So I turned to paraffin-embedded wax tissue specimens, biopsies and autopsy specimens that are routinely taken in hospitals and clinics around the world and then put in the cellar and archived. And it turns out it's kind of painstaking, but you can get gene sequences out of these things.
And who happened to have some of the right sorts of paraffin-embedded tissue you could study?
Well, the one that yielded this sample from 1960 was actually stored in Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, at the University of Kinshasa. And what I did for quite a few years, actually, was just kind of put out feelers and did sleuth work and talked to a lot of old Belgian scientists and physicians who had connections, had either done work in the Congo back in the day or knew people who did, and eventually turned up many old samples like this. And like I say, it was samples that were sitting right in Kinshasa all this time that yielded this sequence.
So you go to old human tissue, you've got tissue from 40 plus years ago, nearly 50 years ago, and you can find HIV in that. What does that tell you about where HIV came from, and how do you wind back the genetic clock to work out when it first popped up in humans?
Okay, the first thing it tells us is you can compare the 1960 Kinshasa sequence to the 1959 Kinshasa sequence. And it's kind of like having a human genome. It's great. It tells you lots of things. As soon as you have a chimp genome to compare against it, there's a whole lot of other things that you can tell by comparing. Once we had these two viruses and put them side by side, we could see that they were really pretty surprisingly divergent. So even at that early date in 1960, a direct comparison of the sequences indicated, okay, these things have spent a long time evolving away from their common ancestor, decades and decades. The other thing that we could do now is plug those early sequences into a more sophisticated analysis using more than 100 sequences worldwide. And they really helped calibrate the molecular clock of these viruses and allowed us to estimate with a lot of precision when the virus started spreading in humans. And like I say, it's many decades before even 1960.
But something must have happened, say, 100 years ago in that part of Africa to make HIV appear. The closest relative of HIV is SIV, a virus which you find in chimpanzees. So what was going on in that part of Africa that meant that this chimpanzee virus got into people?
Exactly. So this is one of the coolest things about the finding. First of all, there are all sorts of SIVs from different primates that are circulating out there. And so this big question is, if these things have been around, why didn't they cross in earlier or later? Why now? Why at this point? And when we matched up the timing of these genetic analyses of the viruses against what was happening in that epicenter region in Central Africa, for me it was a surprise. I didn't realize how little urbanization there was in that region until that time. But basically, in the whole area around Southeast Cameroon, where we think the chimp virus that produced the pandemic strain of AIDS entered humans, there were basically no cities at the turn of the 19th century. And it wasn't until about that time that places like Kinshasa were established as colonial administrative and trading centers.
So you think it was people moving in and establishing cities that basically got the thing going?
I think it's almost too much of a coincidence to dismiss that. What I think happened was HIV is actually a fairly poorly transmitted virus, human to human. You kind of have to set the stage for it to survive and create a chain of transmission. Otherwise, viruses entering from chimps might get into one or two people, but then die out.
So what do you think happened?
With the advent of cities in the region, cities make life a lot easier for HIV. They bring people into high densities. You often have high-risk behaviors like prostitution that facilitate the movement of the virus from person to person. And we talk about this magic number of viruses, a basic reproductive number of one, which means a virus which on average, your average infected person infects at least one other person will persist in the population. If it's below that number, it goes extinct. The advent of urbanization in this area may have pushed that magic number above one for HIV.
And just very finally, Mike, and briefly, I think probably one of the other things to mention might be people immunizing people, because when we set up cities, weren't they exploring vaccines and things in those early days? And could that not also have been how it happened, because people weren't so rigorous with sterilizing needles then as we are now?
This is definitely one of the things that's been discussed as a possible player in the establishment of the virus. My thinking on this is, if you actually look at the timing of those events, people like Preston Marks have talked about the spread of disposable needles. That's actually, in a large part, after this timing that we're pointing to. And the bulk of the transmission of the virus in sub-Saharan Africa still today is through sexual transmission. And I don't see any reason to think that the establishment of the virus had to do with things like dirty needles either. They probably play a minor role in transmission, but I don't think they're the key.
So it's more likely that it's all down to that good old-fashioned population. Thank you very much, Mike Warraby, from the University of Arizona. Kat.